Hey, what's up? It's Alex Morgan. And for me, the start of the new year is all about committing to you from day one. Body Armor's got you, and here to help you commit to your fitness goals. Buy any Body Armor products at your local store, and Body Armor will give you 50% cash back to put towards your fitness journey.
Now through March 31st, commit to fit with Body Armor Sports Drink. Visit www.bacommittofit.com for full rules. And shop now at retailers nationwide.
Hello, and welcome to Vacation Station, hosted by Lisa and Nancy, editors of BigBlendMagazines.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Big Blend Radio's Vacation Station Travel Show. We love to chat with Glenn Burrows every fourth Saturday. And, you know, we do other shows with him, too. Glenn is a family history expert. He's a tour guide and owner of Norfolk Tours in England. And today he's joining us to talk about youth travel in England, especially college student age. I mean, what happens when you graduate high school? Of course, in this country, in the States, we look at spring break, and that gets a little crazy. And I think we're kind of changing out to doing things that are still fun. You want to go, if you're going over to college in England, you're going to want to know about the area, and the family's going to want to know. So Glenn is your dude. So go to norfolk-tours.co.uk. You can read his article about it up on blendradioandtv.com now. So welcome back, Glenn. How are you?
We're very good here, thanks. Yeah, all okay. Good in here. A bit good. Wet, but all right.
Hey, but good. That means you're going to have a beautiful spring, right?
Well, everything is lovely and green at the moment, so that's always nice. Good.
That's nice. That's really nice. You know, the youth travel, I love your article because it just kind of brought us back to all these things of, you know, that we always hear about, you know, but kids can get out there and experience it now. Instead of doing the crazy parties and, you know, sometimes, you know, when I was graduating high school, that was what people were doing before the college. They'd go on these big backpacking trips, and travel at that age is, I think, part of setting up who you are as an individual.
Oh, for sure.
Don't you think?
I mean, when I was at school, it had been about 1974, so I'd have been 15. We went on a Mediterranean cruise, and, you know, I still remember that like it was yesterday, because it was so amazing to go to places like Vesuvius and Pompeii, and to go to places like we went to Venice, you know, to go to those places and to experience them when you're a teenager really does set you up for the love of travel. You know, even again, when I was at school, we had a French exchange system going, so that we had pen friends in France. This was in the days when you still wrote letters, you know, so we had a French pen friend. And then every Easter, we went over to France as a group. And then in the July, the French students would come over to Norfolk. And I've known Patrick, my French pen friend, since I was 12, and we're still very much in contact.
Wow, that's amazing.
He still comes over here. I still go over there. His daughter and my daughter are the same age. They're both got children. You know, when we lost my dad in October, you know, Patrick was one of the first people I told, because Patrick is part of my family. You know, he's like my brother. When I got married, he was my best man, you know.
Oh, wow.
But these things, you know, from teenage to adulthood, they just make your world so much more important, because, you know, I love that part of France. He lives in the Loire Valley in Orléans, where Joan of Arc came from. You know, that's my second home, you know.
Huh. Wow. So that's amazing, because you even worked in France for a while, didn't you?
Yeah, well, that was why I went to work in France, because I thought I love France, so I'll go and work in France. So that's why I went and traveled to France. But it it is the whole point about traveling when you're young, because, you know, by the time you get married and have children, you then put your own life on hold for 20 mm-hmm. years, you know. So yeah. if you want to travel when you're anything sort of 16 to 20 is a really good time to travel. Mm-hmm. But, mm-hmm. you know, we all have to realize that we need to be safe. Mm-hmm. You know? And that is one of the most important things. I mean, when I arrived, you just mentioned going to work in France. I went to France when I was 19, and I arrived in Paris in the station waiting for my connection to Tours, which is in the Loire Valley. And this bloke came up to me and obviously could see I was English. And he said, oh, you're obviously waiting for a train. I can give you some accommodation for tonight. I said, that's all right. Thanks. I'm waiting for a train. I didn't realize that I was in danger there. You know, I was traveling on my own. And this strange mm-hmm. bloke offered me a bed for the night, you know.
Oh, Glenn.
I was a country bumpkin, you know. I didn't understand the danger. But I think now, if we can help young people to travel safely all over the world, that'd be great, you know. And these are the sort of things that we can do.
And the education of it all is very important. I think, you know, the big spring break thing here, I mean, we've done shows on it, and it's still actually one of the top listened show that we ever did was an interview mm-hmm. about a documentary of what happens at spring break. And we're talking about, mm-hmm. I mean, because, and also where your mind is still developing at that age. And so, you know, if you're very young, and so, and your hormones are there. So, you know, everybody's kind of, it becomes a very horrific thing for women, girls becoming women who are, you know, you're women at that age, but it becomes a big thing where it's all about sex and booze and drugs mm-hmm. and
going
that is not
wild.
Safe and going really wild. And it's mm-hmm. Very degrading to women, and mm-hmm. women get themselves in things where it's like, it's almost like a contest. Rape mm-hmm. does occur. So I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer on a party. I think you should have your party, but there's a line, and I think there's enough now to show that it's not a healthy way to celebrate. And now the way travel, I think like England, as we've been saying over the last couple shows, it's very affordable for us Americans and people in other parts of the world to travel mm-hmm. to England right now.
Yes.
And so I think, for youth, this is a good time to go over, whether it's a college group. We knew college students in this country. We met them at a grape stomp in Julian and up mm-hmm. in the mountains where we used to live in California. Mm-hmm. We all got in the grape stomping tank in a winery together.
Yeah.
And some lady got in and dropped her glass
so funny.
In the grapes, and it was broken. And she was just all, oh, I didn't want this, and just dropped it. And we all looked at her and we pelted her with grapes because she had white.
She was dressed all in white.
And she was so full of herself. And these were all Irish students. And we all looked at each other, and that was it.
Said, let's get her.
Let's get her. And we did. And we hung out together all day, all night. They followed us to our house we weren't living in Julian at that point. We were in Vista, California, so about an hour and a half away, mm-hmm. down the mountains with their little rental car, followed us. Then I took them out to meet friends of mine at the beach. Then the next
day,
we took them to Venice Beach, California, mm-hmm. which is crazy. It's drum circles and hippies and music.
That's awesome.
They said to us, they come over every single year. This group of friends come over to the States. I think it was summer because it was the end of August, early September. They come over and they're all students, veterinary science students. Mm-hmm. And they just come over and they have a good time. But they said that because they hung out with us and we took them places, there was the best time out of doing this 3 to 4 years now.
Yeah.
And that to me proves it, because there are places I'm like, no, you don't want to go stay on this side of town. You know what I mean? You go here.
Exactly.
And mm-hmm. it was this connection. And I think that's something what's cool about your style of tours is that you have that personal connection where it becomes fun. You're allowing people to do what they want to do. I mean, this group of young students were they know they didn't want to do something they didn't want to do because it budget of time, a budget of money, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's quite funny you mentioned Julian. I've got a mate of mine who actually owns a property in Julian.
Oh wow.
And that his house used to belong to one of the Disney people. Anyway, going off topic there.
Oh, that's a whole other conversation. Yeah, that is everyone in Julian.
Yeah.
Anyway, what you were saying about young people and the dangers of traveling. I mean, as I said, you know, I was only a 19-year-old from the middle of the countryside, so I didn't realize the danger I was in the middle of Paris, you know, in the 70s. But the sort of thing that I think is important is that for students to travel, to know that they're safe, and mm-hmm. for their parents to know that they're safe as well. I mean, I had a lady over, she wanted her daughter was coming over to study in Norwich University, and she brought her over with a couple of friends to drop them off. But she just wanted to get an introduction to the area. And that's what we did. We had a day riding around the countryside, showing her different areas in Norfolk and sort of talking about life, because it's important when you come abroad for the first time to know what life is like, where you are, where to go, where not to go, what to do, what to ask for, you know. So the sort of things I've put together for this article are a couple of examples about what I could do for a group of students. But again, you know, the nice thing about what I do is that if there was just one student coming over who wanted to get an introduction to the area where they were living and they wanted to have somebody they could trust, then, you know, I could do that for them. You know, I mean, talking about students and young people, I mean, I had one lady over who was, I think she was about 85 or 88, something like that, from Tasmania. And her daughter had arranged for her mum to come over and do some family history. And I spoke to this woman in Tasmania, and she said, you know, she was trusting me with her mum. And she said, I want to make sure that you're the right person for my mum and that I can trust you. And so we had quite a nice little conversation, you know, but that's what she needed. Mm-hmm. And at the other end of the generations, that's also what you need when you've got, I don't know, an 18-year-old who's going to travel mm-hmm. for the first time. You need to have someone you can trust, and, mm-hmm. you know, you can trust me.
Trust me. But that's the thing, you know, and listen, everyone, Glenn has been on our show for years. And so you can listen to him communicate about England, you know, till the cows come home, and really hear and understand what he's saying about that and trusting him. I think what's also really important is when you go to university or college for the first time and you're in a different country. A good dear friend of ours, his daughter ended up in Wales. And I'm like, wow, okay. So, like, you know, not going to college here. She went for some specific reason. And you were talking about college universities in England, some of the most historic ones in the world. And so when you go over, you want to know where to shop, like even how to even use the money. I know that sounds ridiculous.
Yeah.
But so you're not only sometimes this is the first time you've left home.
Hey, what's up? It's Alex Morgan. And for me, the start of the new year is all about commitments. Setting your intentions, restarting your routine, and committing to you from day one.
Until March 31st, buy any Body Armor products at your local Walmart. And Body Armor will give you 50% cash back via a Walmart e-gift card put towards your fitness journey. Visit www.bacommittofit.com/WM for rules. Body Armor Lite, the low-calorie, zero-sugar added sports drink.
Membership fees apply after free trial. Cancel any time.
Can I be real for a second? That goal you have to exercise and eat better, you really can do it, but nobody is going to do it for you. And nobody has to, because you can do it if you have the right tools and a community that cares about helping you get results. And that's us, Beachbody. It's as convenient as your TV or laptop, but you need to decide that you're worth it. Let us help you succeed. Here's how. Go to Beachbody.com to claim your free membership and start feeling great.
But now you're flying the coop into a different country, and you have to study. And, you know, the world is like, it's a whole new chapter of your life. And a big one. So I think that's, you know, I know students that come here, they don't, especially from a different country, like the food is different. I know you, your food is different.
Yes.
I mean, it's similar, but it's
different. Absolutely.
I mean, they should all buy Marmite.
I think the important thing is for parents to know that there is somebody on the ground who they can sort of, absolutely, leave their children under the wing, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I think it's important, even if they don't use that service, at least they can know that there are people there who are happy to help, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that could be, you know, a service that people need, you know, because when our daughter was studying in Nottingham, Nottingham is sort of about where the A is in Birmingham, just above my head. So you can see that's in the Midlands and I'm right over where the red dot is. So it's quite a distance away. It's about 2.5 hours travel. So, you know, if my daughter was unwell in Nottingham University, I could get to see her within 2.5 hours. But if you're in America and your daughter's or your son is unwell, you know, you need somebody to contact who you can trust. You know, that sort of thing is again, what I offered to this lady for her daughter. And there was another gentleman, I said, you know, because his son came and studied in Cambridge. And I said, you know, if he needs to just get away for the weekend and want to have some home cooking, he's more than welcome to come and have some home cooking with us. You know?
Diane Scones. Exactly. Scones.
But you know, neither of the students used that. But at least you know that's available.
It's a peace of mind.
Home from home, you know, it's what you need sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Well, and asking, having someone to ask advice, you know, like if you suddenly, for whatever reason, you needed to go to a doctor, who do you choose? It's good to be able to know someone to ask and get a recommendation.
So, you know, that sort of thing is a possibility. But the other thing, which is what I sort of wrote the article about, was if a university or a college lecturer or professor is thinking about putting together a study trip to England, then that's the sort of thing I could really help with, because I could do everything at this end for them. You know, they could say to me, we want to do a study trip on, I don't know, medieval church architecture. I could easily do that, obviously. But likewise, if they wanted a geography field trip and study river formations, then we could do that. And obviously, being here, I know areas to go to, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, one of the other examples I used was writing, you know, because England has Shakespeare, But we have lots of other things as well. You know, it's not just Shakespeare. You know, we've got loads of other literary experts, you know, so it's something that I can help with. You know, so it's basically, like we always say, is having somebody on the ground.
Well, I know a lady who was the head of booking the trips for college students in different colleges.
Right.
And that was her thing. And she would have to work with people overseas to really get that, and needed someone, not just the specific hotel, you know. So it was like she needed someone that could help on that side with the whole thing going, OK, well, I've got, you know, 20 screaming girls now, you know, coming over, you know, that want to go and do this and that. And it's not, you know, it's having, like you're saying, having that person on the other side, but they were really able to, you know, help her. Like, I don't know any travel advisor, event group meeting, all those planners, they all need like a their right hand over in the place that, you know.
Yes. I think that is so important because, I mean, when we went to Canada a few years ago, well, we've been twice now, it was so handy to have my cousins in Canada who were arranging all our stuff for us because they knew where to go, what to do, who to see, who not to see. You know, they were doing everything in Canada, you know, and likewise, when they came over to England, we arranged everything in England. So they just arrived at the airport and we'd sorted everything out. But that is so much easier and so much better to have somebody on the ground in the country who knows all of the ways of doing stuff in that country. And also they know the places to go, you know, if say, for instance, you wanted to come here and study Shakespeare, then obviously you've got to go to Stratford-upon-Avon. But is it common knowledge in America, for instance, that there is a replica of the Globe Theatre in London that has been rebuilt? You know, they built a Shakespearean theatre, a 16th century timber and thatched building in the middle of London. Look it up. It's called the Globe. It is a replica of Shakespeare's theatre in London. And it's not that well known, probably amongst everybody. But that's the sort of thing that I know of in London because I've heard about it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So there are so many examples of that sort of thing.
That's the thing is like when people are studying something in specific, like they were into veterinary science, like the friends we made from Ireland. So everybody still wants to do something while they're over there that enriches their studies, you know, and what they're wanting to do. But also at that age, I know that they want to have their own free time to explore and do that kind of, because, you know, like backpacking has always been, you know, popular. So is that something you can work around with people like going, hey, you know, all right, Glenn, we want to do some of these things, but we also just want to have our, you know, because at that age, we're wild a little, you know. We want to go exploring and get into trouble just a little bit. So do you give them that breath of being able to do that?
That is so important that, you know, first and foremost, you're coming to England to learn about England. Secondary, if you can do something while you're in England that you can't do in America, then that's really important to do that.
So exactly.
If you're coming over and you're an English student, you know, not an English student, you're an American student who's studying English as a language or English literature or something, you know, come here and have fun and look at London and look at Birmingham and Manchester and or Edinburgh or whatever you want to look at, but add into that a little bit of something that you're studying as well. So, you know, obviously a day trip to Stratford-upon-Avon. But while you're in London, why not actually go to the Globe Theatre and see a performance of a Shakespearean play in a Shakespearean setting? You know,
absolutely.
That sort of thing is something that you are going to remember for the rest of your life.
Absolutely.
And it's so important to actually get a hands-on feeling, a hands-on experience of something that makes whatever you're studying real. You know, if you're studying medieval architecture, or if you're studying, geographic rock formations or something, you know, actually seeing these things in real life is going to be so much more important than reading about them or looking at them on a website.
Right. You said in your article that, you know, the universities and colleges are so old and some of the oldest in the world.
Yes.
That their collections are really extensive. And
absolutely.
So you get to go and actually see the collections, like if it's fossils and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for instance, in Cambridge, they have the Cambridge University Library, which has not every published book, but most published books, because they are a depository that take in every book that is published. They have documentary sources. So they have collections coming out of their ears about so many different subjects. But the individual colleges within Cambridge have their own collections that relate to their alumni, you know, the people who went to their university, college. So, for instance, Pepys, you know, the famous man who wrote his diary, you know, in the 17th century, his diaries, his original diaries are actually in Cambridge, you know, wow. So you can actually see his writing.
That's cool.
You know, there mm-hmm. are, all of the universities have museums attached with their own subject matter. So if you're studying fossils, there's a museum in Cambridge about fossils. If you're studying, Egyptology, you can go to a museum that has an absolute stack of Egyptology in it, you know, that sort of stuff. If you're interested in botany, the Cambridge University gardens has some fantastic Victorian greenhouses with plants from all over the world in, because they have specimens of different plants for the students to study. You know, so things like that are things that you won't necessarily find anywhere else. You know, obviously with plants, you find them in other places, but things like Pep's diary, you're not going to find that anywhere else.
Yeah, that's incredible. Things like that stick with you. Like in South Africa, I went to a museum and they had an Egyptian mummy that was lying flat in the
Pretoria
thing. Yeah, it was in Pretoria.
Yeah, yeah.
But the bottom part of it was a little piece was were missing, and you could see the mummy's toes.
Yes.
He's got a toe. There's a toe. That's it. And so now anytime. Well, there's a roadside attraction in on your way from Arizona through New Mexico, the thing. And it's like the billboard signs, like, you know, kind of those wacky roadside attractions, like from Route 66. Come to the thing, and you pay so much to go in. And every single person that goes there says, don't go to the thing. But no matter what,
you go to the thing.
But and I want to go to the thing because they have a mummy in there, and I want to see if he's got a toe.
Seeing the mummy's toes,
cool stuff.
That was so cool. So they really did have, they did wrap people up and call them mummies. So they really exist. And when you take history and you read about it, it's like, oh yeah, okay, if you say so. But when you see one, then you're like, whoa, they really did that.
Yeah.
Well, that's how I felt about all the castles that I went to in England, mm-hmm. Scotland, and Wales. When you can see, mm-hmm. like up at the top of the turrets, and then at the top where, you know, how people were using like the places to shoot arrows, and you could see what the moats were like. Because, you know, I had all the books, the English history books, even as a kid, open them up, and it's like mm-hmm. every king and queen and prince and princess, and I'm like, how many of you are there? There's a lot. It's more than the size of England, you know, but there's a lot, you know, through the history. And then going to these castles and seeing, you know, the opulence as well, like all the jewels and the cloaks. I'm like,
that's this amazing.
Stuff isn't just amazing illustrations in a book, like from way back when.
It's real.
This is real. But in the dungeons but the moats, like the drawbridges, I mean, that mm-hmm. stuff was insanely
amazing.
Real, but it goes beyond a book to me. You can't.
But see, that's part of bringing history and making history alive, which makes it believable. And once it's believable, you remember it.
Even watching
when
movies,
you get a list of dates, the dates don't really mean anything.
No,
not until you're there and seeing it.
Not until you see something made in the 1700s or the 1600s.
Yeah. But if you watch a movie and you've seen something like a historical piece or a documentary, if you've seen a castle and it's got talking about the castle, but you've been there, it heightens the whole movie experience.
Oh, yeah.
I think the main thing that I get from visiting places is the scale, because you cannot get a scale in a film or on a book or on a website. You know, we've got you're talking about castles. We've got a ruined castle just up the road from me. And it's when you actually walk into the Outer Bailey and you see the motte, which is the big mound where the castle's standing on top. And you think to yourself, or you understand, that this was all made by hand. You know, wow. this was dug out by hand by men with wheelbarrows, and the soil was piled up, and then they built this massive castle on top of this mound. You know, until you actually stand there and get the scale, you've got no perception of how big some of these things are. It's like, I mean, I haven't been to the Grand Canyon, but until you stand on the side of the Grand Canyon and you look down and you think, wow.
And you look down, you're like, whoa.
Dude, exactly. Let me tell you, I get vertigo.
Yes.
And so that being there, just
there's crazy.
And yet I'm intensely curious. So it's a very dangerous combination. So I think in my past life, something happened. I tipped over, you know, must be that champagne over. Sunday. There she
got
went.
Tipped over.
but you know, it's, I mean, you, there is nothing like being at the Grand Canyon. There is, and we've been to places similar, but they have their own unique, like the Rift Valley to me. I'll never forget looking down this giant gorge and seeing zebras at the bottom of this gorge.
Yeah.
And giraffe and there were little specks. I mean, how did that happen?
You know, and driving down what they call the escarpment, that at the time, I'm sure it's a bigger road now, but when I drove down it, you're like, uh-oh, am I still on the road?
Yes.
When
we went to Niagara, I mean, nothing prepared me for the scale of Niagara Falls. Nothing.
Oh, wow.
You know, because you know, you're never going to have an idea how big it is until you're standing there. Mm-hmm. You know, a picture or a film or even an aerial photograph, or nothing prepares you for the sheer scale of these things. And I think that is what is important when you're doing a field study trip, or if you're doing on site work, is to actually get the feel of it. If you're doing geology, you know, actually see where the rocks come from, how they're formed on the side of a mountain, you know, all of them sort of things. You can't get an idea of it until you're actually standing there.
Right.
And I think that is something that field study trips are really good for. But I think also from what we've been saying, I think it's really important for field study trips and for young students trips and things to realize that they're young as well and they need to have a bit of fun. So, you know, we need to work all these things together. So you have fun, but you also learn, you know. It's like when I was a school governor, I used to go in and talk to young children about different things. The main thing was to make it interesting. And then afterwards, they don't realize that they've been actually in a lesson all day, because all they're doing is having fun. But they've been learning so many things. We used to go on field trips where we'd walk into the village and they would be having great fun running about in the fields and looking at this and climbing up that. But actually, when they come back, they'd been doing geography, history, maths, writing. They've been doing all them things, but they were having fun. And I think that is the key.
I agree. I would say go, like, for students, I think so many of them love hiking and being outdoors. I know that just in the American culture.
Yeah.
I mean, the outdoors is a big part of a way of life here. And I think if they had the chance to go, like, as a field trip on Peddler's Way, I mean, and go walk the Roman roads. It is Peddler's Way.
Yeah.
Peddler's, not Peddler. Peddler's, I always say Peddler. Peddler's Way. Okay. And I just always think pedal down the Roman roads. If they can actually experience some of that walking, it's part of the walking history of England too. I mean, England,
but we've
England
got
and
so
like
many.
New Zealand's like that too, huh?
We've got so many long distance footpaths.
Is it called tramping?
Tramping?
Is it called tramping, or is that just in New Zealand that they say tramping?
No, I think that's probably New Zealand. Yeah, but what I'm saying is that we've also got the opportunity to do camping, because a lot of these long distance footpaths are interspersed with campsites. So, you know, although, you know, I put on here that we can arrange, you know, proper rooms for students, which is very important that they have a good night's sleep. You know, they could be in good accommodation, but also it's also important to have some real fun where you're camping out for a couple of nights or, or more, you know, to actually get in where you are, you know, and we all know how lovely breakfast is when you're camping.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. A British breakfast over a fire? Are you kidding me? Oh, my gosh. And tell everybody what a British breakfast, a proper British breakfast.
Proper British breakfast. You got sausage. You got proper sausages from a butcher. You got bacon. You got egg. You know, you got a bit of toast by the fire. Yeah, mushrooms, which you can probably pick in the forest if you know what you're looking for. I wouldn't suggest that.
Yeah, be careful.
But, you know, there is nothing better than having a campfire breakfast. Nothing better. Absolutely fantastic.
Ooh, I love that. And baked beans. Baked beans over a campfire, too. There's something.
That's a cowboy breakfast.
Come on.
You, go back to you the don't baked have apples baked beans and bacon.
Come on. You've got to I don't have
baked beans for breakfast. No,
just what about the baked apples and bacon?
Oh, yeah, there you go. I knew that was coming.
And cheese scones can be anytime.
Oh yes, obviously.
Apparently, Priscilla, our pink sock monkey, doesn't do them quite as well as your wife.
Sadly not.
Oh well. But I think this is exciting because there's so many options. And one thing I do want people to do when they go to England, because it's different, is to go out on the coast. Because the coast, it is just not the same. It isn't. You've got, unless you're from the Pacific Northwest, I can kind of say it gets a little similar. Yeah. But England, you got to just have one of those days where you go to Blackpool and you've got to get into the candy. I know I shouldn't be pushing candy, but the sweets of England.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So different.
Yeah. Talking
about the coast, and one thing that I did sort of just mention in my article was the distances. Now, you can all see that Birmingham, if you look at the G in Birmingham, that is right in the middle of England, but that is no more than 3 hours from the coast.
See?
So you can get to the coast from anywhere in the country within 3 hours, you know? Mm. So what people probably find difficult, the same as I find difficult to think about the scale of America, Americans probably find very difficult to think about the scale of England because we are so small. So it doesn't matter where you are not far from the coast. It doesn't matter where you are, you're not far from anywhere else. You know, you can see London and you can see the red dot where I am. I'm only 2.5-3 hours from London. So, you know, we're not far. I'm only like 5 hours, I suppose, 4 or 5 hours from Wales, which is right across the other side of the country. You know, I'm only, 5 hours by train to Edinburgh in Scotland. You know, so we're not far from anywhere. So if you come to England, you can get anywhere within England, you know, quite easily and very quickly. Well,
I know a lot of students also travel over for festivals, and that's another whole thing too, like Glastonbury and all of that. You know, it's like, do your festival and at the beginning or end of your trip or the middle, whatever, but have the other activities, you know, before or after the festival, you know?
It's a bit like our previous chat about pleasure.
We all love that word.
By making the most of your trip to England or your trip to anywhere. You know, I don't mind where you're talking about going to, but make the most of it. So instead of just coming to England to come to a festival, add another couple of days onto it and do something else. Or if you're going to England on a business trip, add another couple of days and do something that you're passionate about, you know.
Absolutely.
You know, So it is all about the pleasure idea. Just add a couple of days onto whatever you're doing and make it more personal, make it more about you rather than what you're doing, you know.
That's and we that's all really do this true. Thing where, you know, life is short.
Yeah.
Man, seize the day while, especially when you're young and healthy. Do it while you're young and healthy. You never know. I've seen people of all ages go through things I wish.
Yes.
You don't want to be one of those, you know, reflecting back going, I remember once my uncles and a friend had tickets for the Rolling Stones, right? And they were getting picked up by a limo and this whole thing, and I could have gone. And instead, I kept my day job working at the deli. And then I ended up quitting only a week later. I'm going, are you kidding me? And I left the Rolling Stones. But I was trying to do the responsible thing, but it's the Rolling Bloody Stones. I'm sorry. To this day, it'll never be the same. The Rolling Stones. It was the full Monty there, you know.
But this is how.
Don't be like me.
This is how Lisa and I ended up on the road, permanently, because we're so addicted to travel, which to me is a form of education, no matter how you look at
it. Absolutely.
Yeah, but it's a fun way of learning, and it sticks with you. Because you're physically there, and it's just like when you go into a castle, you're right. A film isn't going to show you.
No.
It's not going to give you the feeling, and a picture isn't going to do it. It can intrigue you and interest you. But until you actually go, like, oh man, there's one place, Port Jesus, when you went into the dungeon, Lisa, in South Africa, Port Jesus. And you went downstairs into the dungeon where they used to jail people, and you could see the hang where they hung them on the wall and stuff. It was so creepy.
There's too, you know, when you go to places, when nowadays with like the war, we're like in Russia and Ukraine, you look at this and it's become somewhat obsessed watching it. What's going on TV and obviously listening to Ukraine's president speak, you know, every day. I think he's amazing that he really communicates. But if you haven't visited a battlefield or, you know, those kind of graveyards or like Gettysburg here in the States.
Wow.
It's very easy to let TV become a numbing, non-touchable, like the war's not really happening thing. You know it's happening, it's terrible, but how much do you really care when you haven't really felt that, or it hasn't happened personally, right? Or something personal in your own sphere.
Yes.
And you haven't been to a place like that. It's really hard to grasp the absolute overwhelming horror and terror of war. Right. Yes. It really is. And I'm not saying that I want everyone to feel bad, but, you know, it's like if you go to where, you know, a prisoner of war camp, a concentration camp, you go Auschwitz, right? If you go to places like that, no one's going to tell you the Holocaust didn't happen if you've been to Auschwitz.
Right.
I mean, those people should go with the Flat Earth Society and make their own island. But honestly, you won't understand until you step there. And have that feeling, and that sadness is also what breeds empathy and compassion to do better things and have, I don't like the word tolerance, but to have more empathy and understanding amongst each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that the one thing that this all touches and brings together is the fact that we've got several senses and they all need to be put into action for us to really appreciate something. So when you're actually standing in a castle dungeon, not only have you got the sight of it, obviously, you've got the smell of it, which is, even though there's no dead bodies in a dungeon, it's damp, it's cold,
they're there.
It's smelly. You've also got the feel of it because it's damp and you can feel it's damp. You know, you've got so many things. You've got the sounds of the, you know, different things, how the sounds reverberate around the walls, things like that. And also what you were just talking about, there's a graveyard just outside Cambridge at Maddingley, which is the US Second World War graveyard, where most, not all, obviously a lot of the US servicemen who died during the Second World War and were brought back to England, a lot of them were buried in Cambridge at Maddingley.
Oh, wow.
So the US World War II graveyard is there. And you've got to go there to get that feeling, the scale. Again, it's all about scale.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about how massive this area is. And they are all people who died during the war. And that's only that much of the number of people who died, but it's a massive amount. And when we went to France years and years ago with the children, and we were in Brittany, and in Normandy, and we went to a couple of the World War II graveyards because I feel it's important for the children. And although we didn't make a big thing of it, we just went there and we showed them what they were, and we told them about the battlefields and about the beaches in Normandy and what happened. When we came home, we always asked the children what part of the holiday sort of stuck with them, and that is what stuck with them, the graveyards.
Wow.
Because it was just such a realization that all of these people from all over the all different religions, because there are Jewish gravestones, there are American gravestones, there are British gravestones, there are German gravestones, you know, to think that that was what they remembered most about their holiday. And we'd had fun as well, but what's in their heads.
We went to the Channel Islands between England and France, and Lisa visiting that hospital.
Yeah.
And the hospital was underground
in the cliff.
Water is still running down the sides where the beds are like moved out from the walls, but there's water dripping down the sides like mini little waterfalls. And these people who were injured were put in these beds next to the dripping water.
You've got to think what it was like, you know?
Yeah.
To go through that and even the medicine back then compared to what we have now. Mm-hmm. And go back to the graveyards too. When we went to Gettysburg, Nancy and I were just talking about this yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And about, you know, the Civil War. I mean, like Andersonville, the Civil War encampment it's like being in a prison in a swamp. It was horrible. You're outdoors in tents. But anyway, going back to Gettysburg, you know, we'd done all these radio shows with artists in residence with the National Parks Arts Foundation that had been there, and we interviewed rangers and the superintendent even. And, you know, I thought I knew this history well until we went there. And I just kept looking at Nancy going, it was during the pandemic, but, you know, things were open again and it was just flooded with people. And was too, I couldn't handle the amount of the people and the amount of like, whoa, all these people who fought, including the Native Americans. They had a whole Native American section. Yep. And then the actual, you know, Gettysburg Address and all, you know, that was just incredibly overwhelming. And then we went to, there's parts that you drive it or you go on a horse, you hike it. I mean, it's not small, like what you're saying. And then we went into the cemetery. And what really got her and I was, you see all the gravestones divided up, like you were saying. And then there was just this mass section of unmarked graves, just with an empty plaque
nobody knows.
A blank tomb, you know, blank stone, tombstone.
So many people.
And so what do you do? Yeah, what do you do with that? And it's like when you go to mass graveyards, you know, it was like that. And so we ended up just going to the picnic area and just sitting down with the birds and the squirrels because we had to calm, like it was just too much.
Yeah.
You know?
But again,
I want to go back.
You wouldn't get that if you didn't visit. You wouldn't get that. You wouldn't get that connection. You wouldn't get that emotion. You wouldn't get that feeling. Mm-hmm. And I think that is what field trips are all about. What this is, what visits are all about. And mm-hmm. and it's so important that we get a lot of this when we're young, because then we're going to learn. Like you say, we're going to learn. And mm-hmm. and the best way to learn is to experience, because right. it sticks in your head, because you remember mm-hmm. what it's all about. I remember when I used to go up the primary school, I used to take objects to talk to the children about, like, you know, I've got a wind up gramophone and things like that, you know. And mm-hmm. one of the children, who's the same age as my daughter, so now he's 34, and I saw him when he was in his mid-20s, and he said, "Oh, hello, Mr. Burrows." He said, "I remember when you came to school and showed us that wind-up record player," you know, because he'd experienced it. He'd heard it, seeing how it worked, you know, and I think that is what it's all about. You know, mm-hmm. you remember things.
Yeah, that's the quickest way. You're going to write theses and do all these things, but it's the quickest way to learn. Is to go and do it while you can. Do it while you can. Don't let things get in the way.
You don't get interrupted. Like if you're watching you can be watching the best movie ever, a historic, you know, plot or whatever on television, and then here comes a commercial. I'm sorry, we just destroyed the whole.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean.
This is why we have the whole mood.
Because. Your phone goes off.
I mean, I don't care. Even if you go to the cinema, how many people's phones go off during the movies, you know?
Oh, that's so funny.
Here you are. So it's like, I think we have this constant interruption. And if you travel, you're immersed in it and you're spending mm-hmm. money to do it. So you might as well get the most out of it. And you cannot put a dollar. It's priceless. You know, they always say travel is priceless.
It gives
to you. And the other mm-hmm. part of it is, I think when you go with a guide like yourself who takes you around, and they have this connection with you, they have the connection more to the area and the people, then we tend to be better travelers. So we are giving back into the region as well, because it can't just be one-sided. And so I think you have a better connection than just being put in a hotel room, a typical hotel room, you know, the ones like you talk about, the cardboard ones.
Spitting cardboard, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, none of those. And no factory sausage. You want real sausage for breakfast. No baked beans, apparently. None of that for Glenn. But when you have these real experiences, immerse yourself. But if you have those other kind, that's when you're not really connecting. And that's not going to teach you anything. And you can go take your photo next to the London Tower. It's like the obligatory. If I got the big word today, obligatory.
That's a good word. Yeah,
photo. That's a good word. Photos and put it on your Instagram. But if you didn't really connect, and someone says, "Oh well, blah blah blah" about it, and you have nothing to say other than, "Oh, I had to do it for Instagram." You've got to go beyond that, you know.
You may as well go to a studio, you know. For instance, you can go to the Harry Potter studios in America. Yeah. You know, if you want to see a medieval building, you can go to the Harry Potter studios in America and you can see a medieval building made out of spit and cardboard. But if you actually want to go to a real medieval building, it's a completely different feeling, you know. So it's all about what's real and what's not real.
Oh, there it is. I love it.
Yeah.
Glenn, always a good time. Did we stay on track today?
I think we did mostly.
We did pretty good.
We did good.
Yeah, everyone, again, Glenn's article is up on blendradioandtv.com. Just type in Glenn, G-L-Y-N-N. You'll see all kinds of interviews and articles there. He's here every fourth Saturday, so keep up with us at bigblendradio.com. And on Instagram, why not? But also, the most important thing is to connect directly with Glenn. Go to norfolk-tours.co.uk and keep up with them there. Thank you so much, Glenn. Happy travels. I know you've got a busy couple of weeks.
I have now. I'm doing a medieval buildings week, and then I'm doing a family history week for some hotel people. So that'll be great fun. Getting out and about doing some stuff.
Awesome. Well, you take care and travel safe.
We will. See you later.
Yeah.